Oh me, oh my. Look at that fish.
What is up? Welcome to the Smalley Talk Podcast. This is your host, Joshua Shrinko, coming to you from my mobile studio, otherwise known as the Toyota 4Runner. Had to drop my daughter off at a Christmas show for her to do one song, and I'm not going to it tonight, so I'm sitting in the parking lot waiting on her for 45 minutes. So I thought, what the hell? I'll just go ahead and do my gear review podcast, as I was planning on doing last week and didn't get around to it. First of all, it's the holiday season. Wet boys everywhere rejoice. It is Christmas time, and it has been cold as shit the past few days. In fact, I think a lot of the rivers around here have ice on them already. So, not sure if Chris and I are going to sneak out this weekend. Thinking about it on Sunday. But, if we do, we might have to bust up some ice, boy. Yeah. So, since the last podcast, it's been a while. We had to skip an episode or so. I've been out, a couple times. One most notably was at the beginning of November, where I absolutely torched them. The fishing for, I would say, the mid to late part of November was insane. Before we got this cool down, I only got a chance to get out once, but I have a pretty good pulse on the fishing kind of around here and around the Midwest, and guys were absolutely crushing them. That's obviously changed from a you know, pattern standpoint, just because the water temperatures have dropped drastically. I did go out to try to do some winter fishing last weekend, and it just wasn't quite cold enough. The air temperature was cold enough. The water temperature hadn't dropped down. I did manage to catch one smallmouth, so and froze my absolute little wet boy fingers off. In fact, my middle finger was numb for like 2 days after that. So not sure if I have a health condition or if it just got that cold. But either way, it's back to normal now, so no harm, no foul. But yeah, so hopefully we get out this weekend. I think the water temps are going to be right where we want them to be, kind of that high 30s, low 40s. We're going to be hitting up the winter holes, the discharges, those sort of things. So you know how we like a good discharge. But yeah, the point of this episode was kind of a year end review for my gear, and I was kind of listing some things I wanted to review, and I think in general what I'm going to do is I'm going to make this episode specifically about basically getting into motorized kayaks on the river. And there's other things I would like to review, like some rods that I tried out. I have a really good, I found some really good solutions to some of my gear concerns or problems, whatever you want to call them. And I do think it's valuable to share those with you guys. But we're going to keep it in the kayak realm. Like I said, rods and reels. I got one very specific setup dialed in for a mag draft this year, which whatever you want to call it. I found kind of the perfect setup for what I do and how I use them. And then I also, this was my first full season with the Minn Kota Raptor on the back of my jet, which I was curious to see how that would do in current and how I would use it. So those are all good, valuable things. Broken Twig nets, not new, but I've never done a formal review on them. I'd like to kind of do that a little bit. But we're going to keep this in the kayak space, motorized kayak. And I'm going to break it down into kind of four categories here. So, one, we have the overarching category of just a motorized kayak on the river. Like, what, why should you get or not get a motorized kayak on the river? And where does it fit in? What are its strengths and weaknesses, that sort of thing? And then the three subcategories in that would be the actual boat that you use, the actual kayak, which this season I use the Osprey 1436 by Innovative Sportsman. I think you guys have seen that on my socials and that sort of thing. So I'll talk about the boat itself. Then what motor you put on it. You know, there's not a ton of options out there for kayak motors. So I'll kind of go over what I chose, which was the Newport NK300. It's their 36 volt, 100 and some pound thrust motor. And then the third, which is kind of an underrated thing that I didn't anticipate having that many issues with choosing, but it's the battery. Now, I ended up going two different batteries and kind of swapped them out throughout the season depending on, you know, what I was going to be doing that particular day. But I have a Lithium Pros 30 amp hour, 36 volt single battery. So for those who don't know, these are all lithium. You wouldn't ever want to put a lead acid or AGM on a kayak. It's just too heavy. So Lithium Pros makes a 36 volt 30 amp hour battery. And then I have a Lytime, I think that's how you say it, some Chinese company, a 55 amp hour battery. And obviously the 55 amp hour one is significantly bigger and heavier. I think that one comes in at around like 30 pounds. And then the 30 amp hour one is, I think just under 20, so like 18 pounds, something like that. So I got a chance to play with both of those and kind of give you some ideas about pros and cons on that. So I guess first, I tell you what, we're going to go with the boat first, right? I don't know. I'm not sure what I should do here. Maybe, because I can tell you the by far the most detailed discussion is going to be around just the overall category of, you know, motorized kayaks and rivers. And I guess we'll start a little bit with that, and then we'll kind of break down the boat and the motor and the battery, and then go back to kind of the end. But you know, this is my first season with a motorized kayak, and I honestly didn't even get one until kind of late spring. And specifically, I got one because I knew I was going to go out to the Susquehanna and fish the Bassmasters tournament. And having won it the year before, I really saw that I was severely handicapping myself with a non-motorized kayak. Now, I did win it, so it's hard to make that argument for the year before. But I ended up in a situation where I, you know, didn't need to move a lot, but if I really would have been fishing how I traditionally fish, it would have been almost impossible to do it without a motor. Now, you know, my sort of arsenal with boats in general, you know, I started off in, you know, when I started smallmouth fishing, I had just a regular rotomolded molded kayak that I would do, you know, kind of downstream floats with. And then slowly progressed through a couple of those until I got to the Hobie iTrek. And for those of you who aren't familiar with that, I've been pumping that pretty good the last two seasons, and I've gotten a ton of seat time in that. And it is a fish catching machine. And it's, you know, really, really good boat. Like, it will always have a place in my arsenal. But where it does lack is, like, if you are in heavy current and you're trying to work upstream, which is, you know, one of the things I'll probably talk about the most, you know, if it's heavy current at all, like, it is, you know, it's hard It's a huge physical strain, and honestly, you have to put so much exertion into going upstream with those pedals that, you know, you can't really fish. You're getting a workout in, basically. Now, if it's like moderate stream or something like that, or moderate flow, yeah, you could probably do that, especially when it's low out. You get it, and you can drag around stuff and cut around in eddies and that sort of thing. But generally, I mean, if you don't have a motor, you're going to be working downstream or like around the same area, maybe a little upstream and going back to where you came from. A motor kind of changes the game from that standpoint. And, you know, I didn't really think of it like this from the get-go, but essentially the motor, and I didn't even realize these things are that efficient. You know, I kind of saw people get in the motor game with the Torquedos and was like, yeah, like the river's just too shallow. You're going to be constantly hitting it and, you know, that sort of thing. And honestly, like, yeah, you do run into situations when it's low that, you know, you hit stuff a lot. But really, like, you can use those things pretty effectively all the way up until it gets, like, you know, really low. I mean, especially with the inflatable, which I think makes a big difference. The draft is so high in them that, you know, you really don't take up that much water. Now, the motor does stick down a little bit, and I will talk about that when we talk about the difference in motors, because I opted for the NK300, which gives me more power, more propulsion, but it also hangs further down in the water column. So you do hit it earlier than you would if you would go with this 24-volt version. So I haven't tried the 24-volt, so I don't know how much better it would be, but I have talked to some people that have both, and they say that in certain situations that 180 is a better fit. I don't know that I could ever go backwards because, you know, when you're in current, sometimes you end up using most of that 36-volt juice, and I don't think the 180 would be able to propel me, especially that big of a boat. The 1436 is a 14-foot, 3-foot wide boat. You know, I think it needs a motor that size. If I was in a smaller boat, for sure, I think, you know, a 12-foot boat, I think the 180 would be fine. So, okay, so let's talk a little bit about kind of where it fits into my arsenal currently. So I have the Hobie, which I talked about. I have my jet boat. I have the raft, which is the river rat deal. Then I have my Osprey motorized kayak. And I will say this. Like I said, the Hobie will always have its place. If I'm going somewhere where I need lightweight, car top, simple, I don't want to screw with like a bunch of gear and stuff, and you know, the river is low, or I'm doing a downstream float, you know, or maybe I, you know, only want to fish for a couple hours and I want to go upstream just a little ways, the Hobie is great for that. Or it's like smaller water, if it's like really like, you know, kind of close quarters, like a creek or more, the Hobie fits that bill. If I'm in big water, I'm usually going to opt for the jet boat, although you can take the motorized kayak in just about any water you can take the jet boat in. Now, you can't cover near as much water because jet boat goes, you know, 35 miles an hour or whatever. The kayak's, you know, going like 6-7 miles an hour at most. So it is different, and if you're like, you know, winter fishing where you're hopping from spot to spot that's miles away, the jet boat's going to be the choice. But yeah, the jet boat, and, you know, obviously I can take the family out, I can take a couple buddies or one buddy or whatever in the jet. Like, bigger water, I definitely lean more towards the jet. If I'm in skinny water that I want to take two people, that's where the raft comes in. It's pretty fun. But the kayak, honestly, the motorized kayak's pretty versatile. Like, you can take it on skinny water. You can take it on big water. You can, now you obviously can't, you know, have another person on it with you. Theoretically, I could take one of my kids or something like that. But it also is, when you're solo fishing, you know, aside from the advantages you get from going upstream from a stealth standpoint, an approach standpoint, you get the advantage of going upstream and then single point accessing, essentially coming back to your car. And even if your battery were to die going upstream, you could still get back, you know, by going with the current. So pretty cool from that standpoint. And then, you know, really just upstream approach in general is just better. And I don't care what anybody says. People that river fish, you know, some of them like love to do the point-to-point floats. And trust me, it's pretty sick to do a point-to-point float. I'm not saying it isn't, especially if you're camping, things like that. But from a fishing standpoint, I would literally put my life savings on the fact that I will outfish, all things being equal, I will outfish you going upstream instead of downstream. And the main reason, it's pretty simple. All the noise and shit is going behind you when you're going upstream, and when you approach a fish, they haven't, you know, encountered any of that disturbance. If you're floating downstream and you hit a riffle and you hit a couple rocks, or even the noise is traveling downstream, those fish are aware that you're there. Now, sometimes it doesn't matter if it's kind of high and muddy or whatever, and those are fine. Those situations are, you know, probably not that much of an advantage, but it still is an advantage. And with that motor, you can cover so much ground. It's crazy. And honestly, just boat control, you know, you go upstream, you're going against the current. So the motor is like super, variable. So you can literally go as slow as you want and creep up on areas and have really good boat control. Whereas when you're going downstream, you're at the mercy of the current and you got to flip around and go back upstream to approach places and stuff. It's just a lot harder. So the first sort of like topic of this, motorized kayaks absolutely are badass on the river. And it took me a while to get my feet under me. Surprisingly, not as much as you would think to get used to fishing like that. But they are very, very effective and very deadly for especially medium to small rivers and going upstream. Like, they're very sick. And yeah, I mean, I probably would say I'm much more effective angler on that with the motor than I am even in my jet boat. You know, just because I can control it better. It's more intimate and I can get up in places easier. So yeah, it's pretty sick setup. So we'll go over that here in a sec. I'm going to switch gears to the actual boat itself. So the Osprey 1436, made by Innovative Sportsman. It's an inflatable, like I said, 14-foot, 36-inch beam. It basically comes set up. That boat is set up to be motorized. Like, it's Trey and I think Jeff both designed it. And, you know, you can look it up and see the, you know, kind of setup it is. But it essentially has track that they've pre-installed all around it. Now, you might think, like, it's an inflatable, you know, it's light, but it's susceptible to damage. Like, that is not the case with this boat. One, it's not light. Now, it's lighter than, like, a boat of the same size that would be roto-molded. But it is not light in the fact that I'm throwing this thing on top of my car. Like, it's pretty freaking heavy, especially with all the track around it. And, you know, part of that, that kind of sucks about it, just to be quite honest. Like, the weight, like, I pretty much have to trailer this thing. And, you know, if I had a truck, I could put it in the truck bed pretty easily, but I don't. I have an SUV. Now, could I car top it? Yeah, sure. Do I want to? No. It'd be pain in the ass. Now, with that said, part of the trade-off is they made that boat double thick, like, with material. And compared to the Hobie, it is indestructible. Like, I mean, you would really have to be either unfortunate or, I'm thinking of the word I'm looking for. You just have to disregard any sort of, you know, sharp objects to actually puncture that thing. Like, it's thick. And you can feel it when you pick it up. I also, once I inflate it, I don't uninflate it. I leave it inflated all the time. So, now the advantages behind a, you know, inflatable is, you know, I've talked about it, but if you think about it, one, it's got air in it, so it sits up on top of the water. It doesn't have a keel. And in the river, when you're going upstream, you guys all know, if you've been kayaking the river, trying to go upstream, you know, as soon as your keel catches current sideways, it just flips you around. Like, you don't have that with this boat. It's flat. So, like, as you're going upstream, like, water can be going sideways, diagonal, whatever, and it's not going to push you sideways. And I was fishing with my dad this fall below a dam, and it was really heavy current. And, like, I went all the way up to it and was, like, fishing, and he was, like, getting pissed off because it kept shoving him back downstream. That part of it isn't even, like, yeah, it's not even comparable. It also is very silent, so if you bump to a rock or something, it, you know, makes a tiny little sound, but, you know, compared to, like, hard plastic, it's super quiet. So, you know, obviously you can be careful in a regular kayak, but in situations where there's a lot of rocks, you know, that can easily ruin a spot if you run into a rock and, you know, spook a bunch of fish away. All right, hang on here. All right. I had a phone call from my wife I had to take. But yeah, you know, stealth with an inflatable is a valuable thing. You know, the current, sitting up above the current, and it does draft shallower than like a rotomold, so your motor sits up higher. I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of guys who use rotomold kayaks with motors in a river. It's nothing wrong with it. All fucking go circles around you that inflatable, though, in a river, like, you stand no chance. And no offense, there's a lot of really good motorized rotomolded kayaks. You know, the Scholey, the Attack is good. The one that drew initially, the Kusa. And all the different versions of that, like, that's all great. Like, you literally can't compete with this thing on the river. Like, it is head and shoulders above. Now, if I was going through whitewater or something, like, downstream, yeah, like, the Scholey is probably better because it needs to be, you know, that rocker with a keel to get you through those, like, class threes. But, like, I don't really go through, like, class threes. Like, I'm not going to rivers with a lot of class threes. Now, going up a big rapid is pretty sick in those things, and I have done it. Not a class three, but a class two for sure. I've gone upstream with them. It's pretty sick to do. With them being as heavy as they are, the only downside on the weight on the water is if you do end up in a situation where you're dragging across rocks and stuff, they do want to kind of stick to rocks, that inflatable material does. And it does kind of suck. So if you're going to be like super, super shallow and you're going to be dragging a lot, it's probably not the best boat for that. But I mean, you know, I think common sense would tell you that a motor in where there's no water isn't even going to be advantageous. So yeah, the boat's sick, though. Very comfortable. The seat's comfortable. The storage is not great because there's literally nowhere to store anything, but it's got a big flat, you know, area. Now, you can't put a lot of stuff on it, but everything kind of has to be tethered or contained in a bag or something. The storage, you know, I do have a behind the seat pouch I use, and obviously my crate and that sort of thing. I'm not definitely downside of, you know, not having a rotomolded kayak with like a, you know, inside where you can store stuff, especially stuff you don't need to access that much, you know, like a bag of emergency clothes or, you know, emergency paddles. There's like nowhere to put that stuff. So it does kind of suck. The only like storage thing, like my behind the seat deal, and I did start using those Yak Attack track boxes. I can't remember what they're called. We're gonna call them track boxes. I did use a couple of those, and they're pretty handy. But yeah, boat overall, like very, very pleased with it. You know, Trey and Jeff do a great job with making those things very purpose built. They're not the prettiest thing in the world, I would say. And no offense if Jeff or Trey are listening to this. You know, I think aesthetically, probably could use some upgrades over, you know, as they grow, you know, they start to do a little bit of refinement, is making them a little more refined looking, you know, and all that. But, you know, that's a pretty small complaint to have. Overall, just really, really sick boat. Everything's well made. It goes together easy. When you get it in a box or a couple boxes and you put it together, it's very intuitive. The directions are, you know, I did have a little bit of an issue with the padding wearing off on mine from where my heels were digging in the steering, because it has I think you have to purchase it in addition to the boat, but they have like a steering setup for the motor with foot pegs, and where my heels sat underneath the foot pegs, it basically just eroded all the padding away, which, whatever, it's, like I said, pretty small complaint. Really, really nice boat, though. I like it a lot. Very well built, and it took a lot of abuse this year, and I literally shows zero signs of, you know, wearing out. Whereas like the Hobie, after a season of use, I kind of fucked that boat up a little bit. I had multiple patches on it and stuff, not even remotely thinking about that with this boat. All right, so I will give that a grade. The boat, I will give an A-, and I'm only giving an A- because of it. I would say it's like pretty early in their development of that concept, and I think that there's room for improvement. If I said an A+, that would mean there's nothing they could do to make it better, and I definitely think there's a few things they could do to make it better. Primarily, you know, just making it, you know, nicer looking, and maybe add some storage options to it. That'd be nice. It'd be nice to have some storage options on that boat somehow. I don't know. Even if it was like some kind of built-in thing to it. I don't know. Anyways. Okay, so now I'm going to go to... let's go to the motor. Or let's do the battery. So the battery is like one of those things, like I said, I didn't expect to have much of a issue with finding a battery. I thought I was like, oh man, there's going to be tons of them. Well, first of all, like, there's not as many 36 volt batteries as you would think. There's a ton of 24 volt, but 36 is actually fairly, I won't say hard to find, but like in the amp hours that we need them for, like a lot of them are like golf cart batteries, and they're like they're like humongous. So getting a 36 volt battery with the size that you need proved to be actually way more challenging than I thought. So I initially bought the 55 amp hour lie time battery, and here's what I'll say between the two batteries. Like, the lie time is a freaking brick. Like, it's huge, and it weighs 30 pounds, which is, you know, light for how big it is, but it's still 30 pounds. But dude, I literally like don't think you could kill that without completely just thrashing it all day. Now, I did kill it once. If you saw a reel of Ryan Dahl towing me back to the ramp, That was before I realized you can't just, like, hammer down on 100% throttle all day. And I literally did that. I think I went, like, 20 miles that day. But, like, I was either, like, 0% throttle or 100% throttle heading from spot to spot. And, yeah, like, you can't do that. Now that I've learned, I keep it, you know, really below, like, 40% all day. And there's really no need to ever go to 100%. If I'm going to be out for like a long time and I know I'm not going to get any sort of like, you know, I'm pulling a, you know, 12, 13 hour day and I'm going to be going upstream the entire time and it's stiff current, I'd probably take the 55 amp. Anything else, that 30 amp does fine, like, especially if you're conservative with how you use your throttle. Like, I have not killed the 30 amp hour, and I think the most I went with that 30 amp was, like, it was, like, 8 upstream and 8 down. And I wasn't, like, taking it easy going downstream either. Like, I was hammering it, like, going back, so I still had plenty of throttle, or plenty of battery power left. So, shout out to, Lithium Pro's definitely a better aesthetic battery than the Lithium now, and I feel like it's lighter for the amp hours. It's probably better built than that Lithium's definitely a Chinese battery. They both work fine though, and I just have them in a plastic battery box. It's not waterproof or anything, but it keeps any rain out. I feel like if you turn it over, you're screwed no matter what. So, you know, you just want to keep it from getting, like, soaked. So I have it in one of those. I think I wouldn't go any less than that 30 amp because it's light enough to where I feel like, you know, any lighter of a battery, and then I would just be worried about it dying. So, the Lithium Pro's 36 amp, I'd recommend that one. So, now switching over to the motor, I did go with the NK300. The one deal with that motor, you know, the motors for kayaks they're pretty cool because they're built for the kayak. They have a real short shaft and a, you know, deploy stow, you know, rope that it comes with and a steering cable and all that. The Newport's a little chintzy. I will say that. And I'm sure a lot of that stuff's upgradable, but like, for instance, the motor itself is fine, but, like, the steering triangle is made out of plastic, and I'm scared to death I'm going to break that thing. Now, I think some people have come up with some aftermarket solutions for that, and I think it's a little small, too. I think it needs to be a little bigger. Also, the little arm that goes up that hooks to this pulley system that you deploy and stow with, It's kind of chintzy. I actually drilled a hole in it and, like, zip-tied it to the actual shaft so it wouldn't, like, bend when you pulled the motor the motor sideways. I actually feel like I saw somebody made an accessory for that, too. So, it just, I don't know, it's a little chintzy. The motor itself's fine. The prop's bulletproof. The deploy and stow system's okay. I feel like there should be better engineering for that. It's just like a rope, basically, with a pulley on it, so it does reduce the amount of force you have to exert to stow it. I know I've seen some guys, like Jeff specifically, did a thing where his rope, you know, went through a couple pulleys and you, like, pulled up on it. So I don't know, maybe that, you know, it's okay. The reverse lock sucks because when you want to go in reverse, you don't have time to, like, reach back there and find that dumb thing and then hit reverse while you're holding it. It's dumb. I have seen some guys put, like, a bungee on it. So when you go in reverse, so it doesn't, like, kick up. Like, it still can kick up if it hits something, but if you go in reverse, it holds it down a little firmer than if it was just flopping. If you're not sure, I'm talking about, you know, when you go in reverse. So the thing's basically, you know, when you, it's free floating so that if you hit something, it pops up. But when you go in reverse, the propeller spins opposite, and it'll just, if you go too much, it just comes up out of the water. So it's okay in that respect. So the bungee kind of gives you a middle ground where you can still go in reverse without it flying up out of the water, but you know, it'll still kick up if you hit something. The one thing I did like, that I got and would highly recommend to everybody is Trey's, rock guard. I mean, it would be pretty dumb to not have a rock guard on that thing if you're in the river. I mean, I hit that thing so many times that it was crazy. So now I like the rock guard really well, and he did redesign it. And I still would recommend it 100%. But just being honest, the little thing that it mounts to the shaft, it keeps coming up the shaft. And I know that's a common problem with it. Like, no matter how much you tighten it, it'll walk up the shaft. And there's got to be a way to, like, keep it down. But I was a little disappointed in the design flaw in it with that. Now, with that said, it still functions fine. When it's up, it just, you got to loosen it and push it back down every trip. So, there's got to be a way to fix that. Maybe Trey's new design addresses that. I don't know. But the rock guard is a must if you're on the river. Like, buy one, period, end of story. Trying to think what else here. So the throttle mount, I use Yak Attack's starter mount. It's pretty intuitive. It goes in your track system. It works really well. Other than that, I mean, it's a pretty simple setup. I mean, really, it's an easy DIY project on your kayak. And, I didn't need a mount because Trey's boat comes with a mount, but I know some boats you have to put, like, a mount on there. As far as, like, alternatives, the Torquedo, I mean, in my opinion, it's too expensive for really not much, you're not gaining much. Between the 24-volt and 36-volt, I think that just depends on what your setup is and what you like. I wouldn't rule out the NK180 because I have heard good things about it. So, kind of circling back to, like, the whole subject of, motorized kayaks. Like I said, 100%, like, if you're a serious river fisherman and you fish out of a kayak, like, you're really missing out with that one. And they're fairly inexpensive. I mean, I think that whole setup cost me like $4,000. No, I mean, that's not cheap, but, you know, we've all spent $4,000 on things that we haven't enjoyed near as much as that. So, or wouldn't enjoy near as much as that. You should definitely have one, especially if you fish tournaments. I mean, you really are at a competitive disadvantage without them on the river. You know, I haven't had mine on a lake. I'm sure you could use it on a lake fine. It probably gets blown around a little bit. It does suck. I will go back. It does suck to paddle. So I did it. Wasn't a situation where I forgot my controller and I went somewhere and I had to paddle upstream and it was not fun. Don't recommend the Osprey for pure paddling. It's not very good at that. Some people might disagree with me. I think it sucks. We'll leave it at that. But motorized kayaks in general, like, very, it's a, you know, I said it in a little advertising video for Jeff. He asked me to do, I said it was a cheat code on the river, and it really is. It is a cheat code on the river, 1,000%. And I really, like, never imagined that it would be as valuable as it, and I would have adopted my skill set to it as quickly as I did. It's pretty crazy. Now, with that said, there are some downsides, and I'm getting ready to go pick up my daughter, so I'm gonna have to resume that here in just a few. All right, so it was a little bit longer of a break than what I imagined. So hopefully this podcast is not disconnected, because It's definitely 2 o'clock the next day. I'm finishing up this podcast, and I just listened to the last few minutes of what I recorded earlier, and I was getting to the downsides of a motorized kayak, which there definitely are some downsides. Functionally, I don't know that there's very many. It's more from a complexity standpoint. And, you know, I think it stands to reason that, you know, if you start adding more components to any system, it becomes more complex. And as something becomes more complex, it is more susceptible for problems. You know, you contrast a motorized kayak to literally a sit-in kayak with a paddle. Like, there's just not a lot to go wrong with a sit-in kayak and a paddle. There's more stuff to go wrong, just like you can contrast any motorized kayak to a bass boat or a yacht. And, you know, as you go further up the scale, it requires more maintenance, you know, more, preparation and more engineering, you know, all those complexities. You know, they're there for a reason, to make you more efficient and to utilize, you know, electric power. But it definitely, for someone that's like, man, I just want to get back to just being super simple in the river, like, this is not the direction you want to go. But, you know, like I said, we're not necessarily out there as kayak purists. I don't think most people are. There's a handful of guys that are like, I just want to, you know, I'm a paddle sports guy who likes to fish. And then obviously this wouldn't be for you. But if you're a fisherman at your core, and you like to catch fish the most efficient way possible, then, you know, on a river, like, this is absolutely a more effective way to do that. You know, not in every situation, like I talked about, but in a lot of situations, like, you're going to be at a disadvantage without this setup. So, going into the disadvantages, like I said, it all centers around complexity. And I would say for me, I went through a whole season and really didn't have anything break. So it's not even the maintenance aspect of it, because there's not a ton of maintenance. You know, there's charging batteries and that sort of thing, which, you know, kind of brings me to my main complaint, is just the ability to go fishing without thinking too much into it, like throw everything in the car and go. It definitely makes it a different type of task. And anybody who has, you know, kind of a kayak that's super heavy, and has a trailer in it, and has motors and all that, like, knows what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, could I car top this? Sure. But generally, you know, you need a trailer. And then everything that goes on the kayak can't really travel on it. So I have to, you know, the batteries, the chargers, everything, you know, you got to put it in the car, or in your truck or whatever, and then transfer it onto the kayak at the water. And just that part of it is kind of a pain in the butt, honestly. It's, you know, like, if I'm like, ooh, I want to go fishing, it's actually way easier for me to take the jet out, because everything's contained. You know, like, I hook the jet up to my car or truck or whatever you want to call my 4Runner, and I go, I launch the boat, you know, and everything stays in the boat, including my rods. A kayak, you can't really do that with. You can't store everything, especially an inflatable. It's just like a big flat platform. So everything kind of has to come unattached, go in the car. You know, it just makes for, you know, a process. I would say, you know, you're spending at least 15 to 20 minutes, like, getting your setup ready after you get to the ramp or put it or wherever you're going. And that, you know, contrast that with the Hobie, you know, you don't have the battery or the motor, which both are, you know, decently heavy. You know, it definitely makes for an easier, more simple approach with, like, without a motor. So, you know, like I said, I mean, I would say that's the biggest downside right there to me, And then on the water, downsides, I don't know that there's a ton. I mean, I think that maybe it's more of like taking that boat to types of places where it's not meant for. So, for instance, if you're like, yeah, I'm going to go to this, you know, creek that's low and I'm going to be dragging a bunch, like, you're going to have a hard time doing that with this boat. Like, and I can't remember if I talked about that in the earlier portion, but, you know, it's an inflatable. It kind of sticks to things where, like, the rotomold plastic kind of slides over rocks. These stick. And you add a, you know, the Hobie's not a big deal because it's so light. But you add a motor and a battery to that, like, it's not easy to drag over stuff. So, like, that is, you know, probably the biggest downside of it on the actual water itself. You know, then you have, you know, I don't know, like, I think I mentioned storage as a downside. If I didn't, you know, there's really nowhere to put things. And, you know, I have a kind of a seat back pouch that I have, and, you know, the Yak Attack track mount things, boxes, and but like everything else kind of has to be like tethered and bagged up. It's not, definitely not a great kayak for storage. But, you know, the motorized setup in general doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that. You know, like I said, the ability to go upstream, like work your way upstream, and to, you know, if you don't have a boat, like I have a jet boat, so, you know, I can kind of default to that when I'm doing other things. But, you know, the ability to spot hop with that compared to like a regular kayak upstream is definitely something you just like for instance, if there was a winter spot that was like in the middle of two put ins, like how do you get to that with a non motor? Like, you probably float down to it and then float down to the takeout, and you have to have two cars and do all that. You know, a motorized kayak, you just put in at the bottom one, you run up to it, you fish it, and you float back down. You know, it makes this way more efficient, especially if you're doing a single person trip, which I do a lot of. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much my spiel. When I mean, obviously I highly recommend checking one out and getting one if that's something that, if you river fish a lot, or like, you know, there's certain places where it's like, man, like that's like, there's no way I wouldn't have one. Like, and I mentioned the Susquehanna, like, why would you not have one? Like, you're just doing yourself a huge disservice without that. You know, and then, you know, some of, you know, if you're like using a, you know, on a smaller river and, you know, it's not very fast, like, yeah, maybe like, you know, a simpler setup is more better suited, but it's surprisingly, it's very versatile in the places you can take it and use it. I mean, if I had like my Hobie, that, and my jet boat, which you can obviously deflate them, I could take them all with me. I could literally go on any water I wanted to, like, minus maybe like the Great Lakes, you know, like you can go anywhere with that setup. And, it's pretty cool. You know, as far as rivers goes, I could definitely go on any river with them. So, but yeah, you know, shout out to the companies that sort of provided the products I use, you know, I don't mean provide as in give them to me for free. I just like, they make them. You know, obviously I talked about Innovative Sportsman and Trey, really cool, concept they got going. I'm interested to see where that goes over the next several years. You know, Newport, although I don't have a ton of respect for them because they knocked off Torquedo, they do make a good product and it's solid. Let's see here. Lithium Pros, you know, they make that 30 amp battery's freaking sick. And then, let's see here. Yak Attack always has good stuff, really good stuff. And, I haven't got their new black pack cause I use the Wilderness Systems crate, but I am planning on getting, like a low profile, one of those to put under my seat, because that is, some storage I haven't maximized in that boat. I do have a product that's in the box still that I haven't, used yet, but I do plan on using it next spring is Source Crate. So Josh from Source Crate sent me one of his crates to check out. It's like an aluminum, really simple modular crate system. So I'm excited to try that out. And he also just came out with an advanced foot peg system with like bearings on it. So it's pretty sick. Don't have one of those yet, but I would consider it. The foot steering system on the Osprey is pretty typical. It's all plastic. I don't know if it's okay. I would like some things that I would like to do with that is, I would like to find out a way. And I kind of forgot about this disadvantage. I find myself never standing up on that boat, and it's kind of similar to how the Hobie is. If I'm going upstream, it's really hard to stand up, and I would like to come up with some kind of way to steer that thing standing up. I know it's possible. I don't know how easy it will be, but I do miss standing up a lot. So for what it's worth. But yeah, I think that's about it. And then some other accessories I have. Broken Twig, I talked about, gave him an honorable mention. The Zanets have been awesome. Let's see here. Yak Gadget makes that thing behind my seat, the little pouch. They make some solid stuff. Really pleased with the setup, and I'm looking forward to like being able to use it in the spring, because there's some places like that have water in the spring that I didn't get to take that, and I'm like, oh man, this is gonna be freaking sick to take. So looking forward to that. But hopefully this is helpful for you guys to, if you're thinking about getting into one. I was very like on the fence of whether a motor would even work in the river, the way I use it, and it absolutely does, and it's absolutely like I said, for lack of a better term, it's a game changer. It is a way to access the water that fits into this little spot that I didn't have the ability to do before. And I'm pretty excited about it. So anyways, that's all I got. Chris and I may go out on Sunday, so we'll see how that works. Maybe we'll have some more content for you. But it's getting towards Christmas time. We usually do like a year end review. So I'm looking forward to that. And I will do some other, reviews on some things that, I use, like the rods and that sort of thing. We'll kind of talk about that maybe in the year end review episode. So till next time, Free the Fighter.
No.